Great. Well, thank you very much to the organizers for inviting me to be a part of this panel. I'm delighted to be here today to speak on a systems approach to policymaking for obesity prevention. I'm here from World Cancer Research Fund International, which is a not-for-profit that leads a network of cancer charities around the world, one of which is here in the US, which is the American Institute for Cancer Research. We also have cancer charities in the UK, the Netherlands, and Hong Kong. I have no interest to disclose. Okay, so overweight and obesity, what do we know about it? 1.9 billion adults and 42 million children under the age of 5 are currently overweight or obese. Now, this is a challenge because we know that being overweight or obese increases the risk of a number of non-communicable diseases, including cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. And importantly, we know that non-communicable diseases are the world's number one killer in both the developed and the developing world. So obesity, as we've already heard, is a complex issue. And so therefore, we need an equally complex solution in order to address it. This is also part of the Foresight project that you're seeing here. And this is looking at the map slightly differently by dividing it into different clusters. So recognizing that the number of different factors that impact obesity can be grouped into clusters. And if we are to address obesity, we need interrelated, coordinated, integrated actions that are happening across all of these different groups. So to provide a bit of an outline of what I'm going to be discussing today, first I'm going to be talking about a policy framework, what this looks like in action, and then ending with talking about the importance of evaluation and accountability. World Cancer Research Fund International created the Nourishing Framework, which is a policy framework that involves 10 different policy areas across three domains to promote healthy diets and reduce obesity. Just out of interest, has anybody come across the Nourishing Framework before? Yeah, great, wonderful. So the letters in Nourishing all represent each of the different 10 policy areas. And importantly, it is across these three different domains in which these exist, which is the food environment, the food system, and behavior change communication. Now, in taking a comprehensive approach to obesity prevention, it's necessary for governments to take action in each of these different policy areas. And policy coherence is key. Policy coherence is defined by the OECD as the systematic promotion of mutually and reinforcing policy actions across government departments and agencies, creating synergies towards achieving the agreed objectives. Now, that's a bit of a mouthful. So put more simply, it means that policies that do not undermine each other and in order to achieve objectives that have already been agreed by government. So we need much more cross-communication between sectors, and in identifying policies that can be promoting health, they often fall outside of the health sector. And so it's important to identify what the cross benefits are to the sector in which this policy may exist. The Nourishing Framework is accompanied by a policy database that includes examples of implemented government policy actions from around the world. So this is the screenshot of our R page, Restrict Food Marketing. And as you can see on the left-hand nav, you can go into the different policy areas. And then on the website, the table will just sort of go on forever, or so it seems sometimes, with examples of policies that have been implemented around the specific area. So just to give you a brief tour of what this could look like. So here, under Restrict Food Marketing, you can find South Korea's policy that prohibits the use of gratuitous incentives for purchase, so online, so no free toys. And importantly, this is one of the few regulations that exists currently, mandatory regulations that exist, that is regulating the digital space, which is increasingly more important when we're considering food marketing to kids. Then if we move to H, which is harness the food supply chain, let me just move the mouse here. You can find examples of nutrition standards for public procurement. So executive orders in both New York City and Massachusetts have public procurement guidelines that set nutritional standards for what can be purchased and provided on public premises. And then to end the tour, under G, give nutrition education. In England, it's incorporated, it's a mandatory component of the curriculum for children in the years 1 to 9 to have mandatory food, hands-on food preparatory skills. So that just gives you a taste of the different types of policies that you can find that are associated within the framework, but within the policy database. So then to focus on what this looks like in action, I'm going to be talking about a piece of work that we launched at the World Health Assembly last year, which was a policy brief that we developed on curbing global sugar consumption. So why did we focus on sugar? One, we know that it's widely available and cheap. We know that global consumption patterns in every country exceed the World Health Organization sugar guideline, and that was recently the updated one was recently launched. And we know that consumption is growing, especially in low and middle income countries. In fact, almost 3/4 of global sugar consumption each year takes place in developing countries. And so to coincide with the launch of the World Health Organization sugar guideline, we thought that we would take a look, starting within nourishing, of what policies exist that can help reduce sugar intakes. Oh, and then just bringing the link back to non-communicable diseases. So we know that excessive sugar consumption leads to weight gain. Weight gain it increases the risk it leads to being overweight or obese, which increases the risk of a number of non-communicable diseases. So this is the sugar policy brief. There are a few in the back if you're interested in taking a physical copy home with you, or we also have them available on our website. So what we did was we took a look within nourishing, and we wanted to see how can policy help reduce sugar intake. And we categorized a number of different policies according to 4 different A's. So how available sugar and sugary products is, the affordability of sugar and sugary products, how acceptable sugar is and the alternatives to sugar are, and also how aware are we of sugar in our products. But importantly, as we've heard consistently today, isolated actions aren't going to be effective at reducing obesity, or narrowing in on sugar consumption aren't going to be effective at reducing sugar consumption. And so a comprehensive policies is really necessary in order to tackle all 4 of these A's. So I'm going to take a quick tour of some of the policies that we found to be effective and feasible that can affect some of these 4 A's. So looking at availability, starting with looking at the availability of sugar and sugary products in schools. There's some research of France's vending machine ban that was put in place in 2004 that's part of their public health law. And research shows that pre and post vending machine ban, the consumption of fat, sodium, and especially added sugar during the morning break significantly reduced. If we look at the Shop Healthy New York City program, so looking at availability of sugar and sugary products within retail environments, this is a program that aims to increase access to healthy foods within communities, so especially within convenience stores and smaller sort of bodegas or supermarkets. And what an evaluation of this program saw within the Bronx neighborhoods was that across participating stores, 75% displayed low-calorie refrigerated drinks and water at eye level after the implementation, and that's up from 45%. Stores were advertising more of healthy options, so the advertising of healthy options increased from 42% to 90%. And they also found that the advertising for sugary drinks decreased from 85% to 52%. So again, trying to make those local food environments, convenience stores, have more availability, and also shifting the balance of what's being promoted. Moving on to affordability, Mexico's sugary drinks tax has been in the news quite a bit lately. Not sure if you've been following it, but in 2004, in January, Mexico implemented their 10% sugary drinks tax, and it's been evaluated, and within 2014, what the initial evaluation showed is that there, on average, during the 12 months of 2014, there was an average of 6% reduction in the purchase of sugary drinks. And by the time December came around, compared to previous years, there had been a 12% decrease. Now, a couple weeks ago, this tax was at risk of being halved to 5% for certain beverages. And so the civil society mobilized very quickly, wrote some letters, influenced people at all levels within the Mexican government, and I'm very pleased to say that on the 29th of October, a decision was made within the Mexican government that it would remain at 10%. So this is not only a real bonus and a great thing for Mexico, but also for other countries around the world who are watching this tax very carefully. So it will be interesting to see the further evaluations of the impact of this tax. So an initial sort of decrease, looking at the purchasing patterns, that's a step in the right direction. Now, when we look at acceptability of alternatives, this can also be within a school environment. So we've heard about the importance of water being available as an alternative to sugary drinks. In Hungary, this program, which I love the name, it's called HAPI, Hungarian Aqua Promoting Program in the Young. It was a program that looked to increase the acceptability of water as compared to sugary drinks, and to increase students' knowledge of water and how much to drink and the health benefits of that. And this program used water coolers within the classroom to make water available. And after the program, there was a significant reduction in sugary drinks consumption was seen, and almost an equal increase in water consumption. Fruit and vegetable programs can also have an impact. So again, we're looking to increase the acceptability of fruit and vegetable compared to sugary products. Now, after Halloween, the excitement of an apple versus a chocolate bar that you've received maybe not so strong. But what's interesting is that this program in Norway, after post-evaluation, they found that through this program, where students would receive one piece of fruit or vegetable a day, it not only increased the consumption of fruit and veg, but they actually saw a decrease in unhealthy snack consumption. So if children are looking for that little bit of sweet, then you know it doesn't have to be a sugary product. It can be a fruit, and the program actually saw this reduction in unhealthy snacks. Looking at awareness, Los Angeles County had a sugar pack campaign. It was a rather comprehensive campaign that used paid media in a number of different environments, as well as using social media quite heavily. They had a website with a sugar calculator. And the aim was really to increase people's awareness of the amount of sugar, the number of sugar packs within sugary drinks, and also to increase the knowledge of the health effects of obesity. And so after this campaign, it was evaluated, and sure enough, it was seen that people's awareness of sugar or the number of sugar packs increased. And about 60%, over 60% of respondents to the survey said that they were more, they're likely or very likely to reduce their sugary drinks consumption, daily sugary drinks consumption. Now, at the beginning, I talked about the importance of addressing these A's altogether. A comprehensive approach is really necessary. And a good example of this is a program in France, which is the National Nutrition and Health Program. Now, this program looks to promote health more widely, but it has a number of policies within it that can help curb sugar consumption. So there are mass media campaigns around fruit and veg intake. There's mandatory nutrition guidelines for food offered within schools. And they have charters of voluntary commitment with industry to reduce sugar in products. And this is monitored by an external, an independent group called the Food Quality Observatory, which was set up within the program. And they've seen significant reductions across a number of food categories, including between 2001 and 2008, a 10% reduction in sugar content amongst breakfast cereals. So moving on to the importance of evaluation and accountability, it's been said that what gets measured gets done. And currently there's not enough evaluation of implemented policy actions. We have a lot of research to inform at times what comes into policy, but looking at the impact once they are implemented within a real-world setting, it is lacking. And then when looking at evaluating these implemented actions, using appropriate indicators of success. So within the Mexican sugar drinks tax, using that as an example, if we looked at obesity rates following the implementation of the tax, that would not be a good measure of success because there's so many different factors that that affect obesity, as we know. And so looking at breaking it down to understand the pathway of change that's necessary and how multiple different actions together can influence those different indicators along the pathway. So with Mexico, as I said, currently we're quite pleased with seeing a reduction in purchases, and that's one step along the pathway of change. So there's a real role for the research community in this area to identify and test common intermediary indicators that could be used across interventions. And then accountability. So governments need to take action and need to take more action in order to tackle obesity. There are a few challenges here. One, it's around having governments commit to that action, and then also recognizing that they need to be held to account to commitments that they make. Within the global action plan for non-communicable diseases, heads of state and government around the world have made commitments to change. But what we're really needing now is the shift to national level action. So within their context, using information within their national context in order to set out a comprehensive plan of how they're going to meet these commitments that they've made. And this is a real area that I see the role for civil society. So, we're doing our part in a bit with the nourishing framework in monitoring the policy actions that are being implemented. But it's really important that we continue to monitor that progress and bring it to the attention of governments to ensure that the voluntary targets that are set for 2025 are in hope of being met. So to conclude, again with this complex map of the different factors that influence obesity, adult obesity rates in every country of the world are increasing. No country has seen a decline, and so therefore our approach needs to change. We need a coordinated, integrated, comprehensive, and systems approach to policymaking to see a change in obesity. Thank you very much. If you have any questions beyond the panel, feel free to be in touch with me, but I'm looking forward very much to the discussion that will follow. Thank you.